Chapter 13. Persecuting Powers Professedly Christian. Verses 1 to 10. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, and his seat, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. The sea is a symbol of peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Revelation chapter 17, verse 15. A beast is the Bible symbol of an unrighteous nation or power, representing sometimes the civil power alone, sometimes the ecclesiastical in connection with the civil. Whenever a beast is seen to come up out of the sea, it denotes that the power arises in a thickly populated territory. And if the winds are represented as blowing upon the sea, as in Daniel chapter 7, verses 2 and 3, political commotion, civil strife, and revolution are indicated. By the dragon of the previous chapter, and the beast first introduced in this, we have the Roman power as a whole brought to view in its two phases, pagan and papal. Hence these two symbols have each the 7 heads and 10 horns. See on chapter 17, verse 10. The 7-headed and 10-horned beast, or more briefly the leopard beast here introduced, symbolizes a power which exercises ecclesiastical as well as civil authority. This point is of sufficient importance to justify the introduction of a few of the conclusive arguments which go to prove it. The line of prophecy in which this symbol occurs commences with chapter 12. The symbols of earthly governments embraced in the prophecy are the dragon of chapter 12 and the leopard beast and two-horned beast of chapter 13. The same line of prophecy evidently continues in chapter 14, closing with verse 5 of that chapter. Commencing therefore with verse 1 of chapter 12 and ending with verse 5 of chapter 14, we have a line of prophecy distinct and complete in itself. Each of the powers here introduced is represented as fiercely persecuting the Church of God. The scene opens with the Church under the symbol of a woman, anxiously longing for the promise to be fulfilled, that the seed of the woman, the Lord of glory, should appear among men. The dragon stood before the woman for the purpose of devouring her child. His evil design is thwarted, and the child is caught up to God and his throne. A period follows in which the Church suffers severe oppression from this dragon power. And though in this part of the scene the prophet occasionally glances forward, once even down almost to the end, because all the enemies of the Church were to be actuated by the spirit of the dragon, yet in verse 1 of chapter 13 we are carried back to the time when the leopard beast, the successor of the dragon, commences his career. From this power, for the long period of 1,260 years, the Church suffers war and persecution. Following this period of oppression, the Church has another conflict, brief but sharp and severe, with the two-horned beast. Then comes deliverance, and the prophecy closes with the church brought safely through all her persecutions, and standing victorious with the Lamb on Mount Zion. Thank God for the sure promise of final victory. The one character which ever appears the same in all these scenes, and whose history is the leading theme through all the prophecy, is the Church of God. The other characters are her persecutors, and are introduced simply because they are such. And here, as an introductory inquiry, we raise the question, who or what is it that persecutes the true church? It is a false or apostate church. What is it that is ever warring against true religion? It is a false and counterfeit religion. Who ever heard of the civil power merely of any nation persecuting the people of God? Governments may war against other governments to avenge some wrong, real or imaginary, or to acquire territory and extend their power, as nations have often warred against the Jews. But governments do not persecute. Mark the word do not persecute. People, on account of their religion, unless under the control of some opposite and hostile system of religion. But the powers introduced in this prophecy, the dragon, the leopard beast, and the two-horned beast, are all persecuting powers. They are actuated by rage and enmity against the people and church of God. And this fact is of itself sufficiently conclusive evidence that in each of these powers, the ecclesiastical or religious element is the controlling power. Take the dragon. What does it symbolize? The Roman Empire is the undeniable answer, but this is not enough. No one would be satisfied with this answer and no more. It must be more definite. We then add the Roman Empire in its pagan form, to which all must also agree. But just as soon as we say pagan, we introduce a religious element. For paganism is one of the hugest systems of counterfeit religion that Satan ever devised. The dragon, then, is so far an ecclesiastical power that the very characteristic by which it is distinguished is a false system of religion. And what made the dragon persecute the Church of Christ? It was because Christianity was prevailing against paganism, sweeping away its superstitions, overturning its idols, and dismantling its temples. The religious element of that power was touched, and persecution was the result. We now come to the leopard beast of chapter 13. What does that symbolize? The answer still is the Roman Empire. But the dragon symbolized the Roman Empire, and why does not the same symbol represent it still? Ah, there has been a change in the religious character of the empire. And this beast symbolizes Rome in its professedly Christian form. And it is this change of religion, and this alone, which makes a change in the symbol necessary. This beast differs from the dragon only in that he presents a different religious aspect. Hence, it would be altogether wrong to affirm that it denotes simply the Roman civil power. To this beast the dragon gives his seat, his power, and great authority. By what power was pagan Rome succeeded? We all know that it was by papal Rome. It matters not to our present purpose when or by what means this change was effected. The great fact is apparent, and is acknowledged by all, that the next great phase of the Roman Empire, after its pagan form, was its papal. It would not be correct, therefore, to say that pagan Rome gave its seat and power to a form of government merely civil, having no religious element whatever. No stretch of the imagination can conceive of such a transaction. But two phases of empire are here recognized, and in the prophecy Rome is pagan until Rome is papal. The statement that the dragon gave to the leopard beast his seat and power is further evidence that the dragon of Revelation chapter 12, verse 3, is not a symbol of Satan personally. For Satan has not abdicated in favor of any other male volant being, and he has not given up his seat to any earthly power. But it may be said that it takes the leopard beast and two-horned beast together to constitute the papacy, And hence it is to these that the dragon gives his power, seat, and great authority. But the prophecy does not say so. It is the leopard beast alone with which the dragon has to do. It is to that beast alone that he gives his power, seat, and great authority. It is that beast that has a head that is wounded to death, which is afterward healed. That beast that the whole world wonders after. That beast that receives a mouth speaking blasphemies, and that wears out the saints for 1,260 years. And all this before the succeeding power, the two-horned beast, comes upon the stage of action at all. The leopard beast alone, therefore, symbolizes the Roman Empire in its papal form, the controlling influence being ecclesiastical. To show this more fully, we have but to draw a parallel between the little horn of Daniel chapter 7, verses 8, 20, 24, and 25, and this power. From this comparison, it will appear that the little horn referred to and the leopard beast symbolize the same power. But the little horn is acknowledged on all hands to be a symbol of the papacy. There are 6 points of identity as follows. Number 1. The little horn was a blasphemous power. He shall speak great words against the Most High, Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. The leopard beast of Revelation 13, verse 6 does the same. He opened his mouth in blasphemy against God. Number 2. The little horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Daniel chapter 7, verse 21. This beast also, Revelation 13, 7, makes war with the saints and overcomes them. Number 3. The little horn had a mouth speaking great things. Daniel chapter 7, verses 8 and 20. And of this beast we read in Revelation chapter 13, verse 5, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. Number 4. The little horn arose on the cessation of the pagan form of the Roman Empire. The beast of Revelation chapter 13, verse 2, arises at the same time, for the dragon, pagan Rome, gives him his power, his seat, and great authority. Number 5. Power was given to the little horn to continue for a time, times, and the dividing of time, or 1,260 years. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. To this beast also power was given for 42 months, or 1,260 years. Revelation chapter 13, verse 5. Number 6. At the end of that specified period, the dominion of the little horn was to be taken away. Daniel chapter 7, verse 26. At the end of the same period, the leopard beast was himself to be led into captivity. Revelation chapter 13, verse 10. Both of these specifications were fulfilled in the captivity and exile of the Pope, and the temporary overthrow of the papacy by France in 1798. Here are points that prove identity, for when we have in prophecy 2 symbols, as in this instance, representing powers that come upon the stage of action at the same time, occupy the same territory, maintain the same character, do the same work, exist the same length of time, and meet the same fate, these symbols represent the same identical power. Now all the particulars above specified do apply alike to the little horn and the leopard beast of chapter 13, showing that these 2 symbols represent the same power. It is admitted on all hands that the little horn represents the papacy, and he who claims that this leopard beast does not represent the same must, to be consistent, show that at the same time the papacy arose, there arose another great power exactly like it, occupying the same territory, bearing the same character, doing the same work, continuing the same length of time, and meeting the same fate, and yet a separate and distinct power, which would be as absurd as it would be impossible. The head that was wounded to death was the papal head. We are held to this conclusion by the very obvious principle that whatever is spoken in prophecy of the symbol of any government applies to that government only when it is represented by that symbol. Now Rome is represented by two symbols, the dragon and the leopard beast, because it has presented two faces, the pagan and the papal. And whatever is said of the dragon applies to Rome only in its pagan form. And whatever is said of the leopard beast applies to Rome only in its professedly Christian form. But Rome was pagan in John's day, who lived under the sixth or imperial head. This shows us at once that six of the heads, including the imperial, belong to the dragon. And if it was any one of these heads which was wounded to death, then it was one of the heads of the dragon, or one of the forms of government that belonged to Rome in its pagan form, and not one of the heads of the beast. And John should have said, "I saw one of the heads of the dragon wounded to death." But he says that it was one of the heads of the beast that was wounded to death. In other words, this wound fell upon some form of government that existed in the Roman Empire after its change from paganism to Christianity. But after this change, there was but one head, and that was the papal. Thus, it is placed beyond controversy that it was none other than the papal head that was wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. This wounding is the same as the going into captivity, Revelation chapter 13, verse 10. It was inflicted when the Pope was taken prisoner by Berthier, the French general, and the papal government was for a time abolished in 1798. Stripped of his power, both civil and ecclesiastical, the captive Pope, Pius VI, died in exile at Valence in France, August 29, 1799. But the deadly wound was healed when the papacy was re-established, though with a diminution of its former power, by the election of a new Pope, March 14, 1800. See Bauer's History of the Popes, pages 404 to 428. Crowley on the Apocalypse, London edition, page 251. This beast opens his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name. See mention under Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, of the presumptuous titles assumed by the popes. He blasphemes the tabernacle in heaven by turning the attention of his subjects to his own throne and palace instead of to the tabernacle of God, by turning their attention away from the city of God, Jerusalem above, and pointing them to Rome as the eternal city. And he blasphemes them that dwell in heaven, by assuming to exercise the power of forgiving sins, and so turning away the minds of men from the mediatorial work of Christ and his heavenly assistance in the sanctuary above. By verse 10 we are again referred to the events of 1798, when that power that had for 1,260 years led the saints of God into captivity was led into captivity itself, as already noticed. Verses 11 to 17. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth, and them which dwell therein, to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name.
These verses bring to view the third great symbol in the line of prophecy we are examining, usually denominated the two-horned beast. We inquire for its application. The dragon, pagan Rome, and the leopard beast, papal Rome, present before us great organizations standing as the representatives of two great systems of false religion. Analogy would seem to require that the remaining symbol, the two-horned beast, have a similar application and find its fulfillment in some nationality which is the representative of still another great system of religion. But the only remaining system which is exercising a controlling influence in the world today is Protestantism. Abstractly considered, paganism embraces all heathen lands, containing more than half the population of the globe. Catholicism, which may perhaps be considered as embracing the religion of the Greek Church, so nearly identical with it, belongs to nations which compose a great portion of Christendom. Mohammedanism is an effete system, which has ceased to be any important factor in the world's progress. Moreover, it seems to have received enough prophetic attention in Daniel chapter 11 and Revelation chapter 9. But Protestantism is the religion of nations which constitute the vanguard of the world in liberty, enlightenment, progress, and power. If then Protestantism is the religion to which we are to look, to what nationality as the representative of that religion does the prophecy have application? There are notable Protestant nations in Europe, but for reasons which will hereafter appear, the symbol cannot apply to any of these. A careful investigation has led to the conclusion that it does apply to Protestant America or the government of the United States. We trust the reader will now feel impatient for some of the reasons for such an application and will carefully consider the evidence by which it is supported. Number 1. Probabilities considered. Are there any reasons why we should expect that our own government would be mentioned in prophecy? On what conditions have other nations found a place in the prophetic record? First, if they have acted any prominent part in the world's history, and secondly, and above all, if they have had jurisdiction over or maintained any relations with the people of God. In the records of the Bible and of secular history, we find data from which to deduce this rule respecting the prophetic mention of earthly governments. Namely, whenever the relations of God's people to any nation are such that a true history of the former, which is the object of all revelation, could not be given without a notice of the latter, such nation is mentioned in prophecy. And all these conditions are certainly fulfilled in our government. No nation has ever attracted more attention, excited more profound wonder, or given promise of greater eminence or influence. And certainly here, if anywhere on the globe, are to be found a strong array of Christians, such as are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, whose history could not be written without mention of that government under which they live and enjoy their liberty. And the conviction has fastened itself upon many minds that the hand of Providence has been conspicuously manifest in the rise and progress of this nation. Governor Pownall, an English statesman in 1780, while our revolution was in progress, predicted that this country would become independent and that a civilizing activity beyond what Europe could ever know would animate it, and that its commercial and naval power would be found in every quarter of the globe. He then speaks of the probable establishment of this country as a free and sovereign power, as a revolution that has stronger marks of divine interposition superseding the ordinary course of human affairs than any other event which this world has experienced. De Tocqueville, a French writer, speaking of the separation of the United States from England, says, "It might seem their folly, but was really their fate, or rather the providence of God, who has doubtless a work for them to do, in which the massive materiality of the English character would have been too ponderous a dead weight upon their progress." George Alfred Townsend, speaking of the misfortunes that have attended the other governments on this continent, New World and Old, page 635, says, "The history of the United States was separated by a beneficent providence far from the wild and cruel history of the rest of the continent." Such considerations as these are calculated to arouse in every mind a strong expectation that this government will be found to have some part to act in the carrying out of God's providential purposes in this world, and that somewhere it will be spoken of in the prophetic word. Number 2, the chronology of this power. At what period in this world's history is the rise of this power placed in the prophecy? On this point, the foundation for the conclusions at which we must arrive is already laid in the facts elicited in reference to the preceding or leopard beast. It was at the time when this beast went into captivity or was killed, politically, with the sword, verse 10, or which we suppose to be the same thing, had one of its heads wounded to death, verse 3, that John saw the two-horned beast coming up. If the leopard beast, as we have conclusively proved, signifies the papacy, and the going into captivity met its fulfillment in the temporary overthrow of the popedom by the French in 1798, then we have the time definitely specified when we are to look for the rise of this power. The expression coming up must signify that the power to which it applies was but newly organized and was then just rising into prominence and influence. The power represented by this symbol must then be some power which in 1798 stood in this position before the world. And in what conditions stood the United States of America at that time? Macmillan and Company, the London publishers, in announcing their Statesman's Yearbook for 1867, make an interesting statement of the changes that took place among the leading nations of the world during the half-century between the years 1817 and 1867. They say, quote, "The half-century has extinguished 3 kingdoms, 1 grand duchy, 8 duchies, 4 principalities, 1 electorate, and 4 republics. 3 new kingdoms have arisen, and 1 kingdom has been transformed into an empire. There are now 41 states in Europe against 59 which existed in 1817. Not less remarkable is the territorial extension of the superior states in the world. Russia has annexed 567,364 square miles. The United States, 1,968,009. France, 4,620. Prussia, 29,781. Sardinia, expanding into Italy, has increased by 83,041. The Indian Empire has been augmented by 431,616. The principal states that have lost territory are Turkey, Mexico, Austria, Denmark, and the Netherlands. In their bearing upon the prophecy before us, these statements are worthy the particular attention of the reader. During the half-century named, 21 governments disappeared altogether, and only 3 new ones arose. 5 lost in territory instead of gaining. Only 5 besides the United States added to their domain, and the one which did the most in this direction added only a little over 500,000 of square miles, while the United States added nearly 2,000,000 square miles. Thus the American government added over 1,400,000 square miles of territory during the 50 years named, more than any other single nation, and over 800,000 more than were added during that time by all the other nations of the earth put together. Can anyone doubt what nation was emphatically coming up during the period covered by these statistics? Certainly it must be admitted that the United States is the only power that meets the specifications of the prophecy on this point of chronology.